I've been asked to make it a bit shorter than we had planned. Some of these slides you will see in the background, which we are partially covering, we will skip a bit faster over, but and I don't see it from here, so I need to turn around. That's the way it's going to be. So, good morning. We're going to talk about Osloviken. It's quite an interesting place to live and work. Actually, it's about 100,000 students in this region. There is three of the four largest higher education institutes in Norway are there. And we have 100,000 technology jobs and about 51% of the, what does it say here? Workforce has higher education. So it's quite a powerful region in many ways. But when I say that, we are bragging. We're talking about how highly ranked the region is in various areas, in various rankings. We can see in many rankings where it really is listed pretty nicely up. We compare well on some rankings for innovation, well on quality of life and quality of work, etc. And people write more internationally about this region. It's fantastic. So what we did, we worked through a bunch of international rankings and reports about Oslo compared to other cities, Norway compared to other countries, a lot of them. And it shows one thing. First of all, in these rankings, this is at the Indigo Index. Sweden is on top as often, then Finland and Denmark, and then we are a bit further down. And that goes across all of these rankings, whether it is the Bloomberg Innovation Index, the Global Innovation Index, the Global Competitiveness Report, or whatever it is. The same story everywhere. And then you also see Norway is trailing. You know, when Sweden is among the five in the top, Norway is down in number 15 or 18 or whatever. So let's take a look at that. Because when you look behind the number, all these rankings are compiling of a lot of indicators. And if you look behind each accumulated number, you see the indicators are classified into input indicators and output indicators. Input indicators are innsatsfaktorer. It's what we put in. And output indicators are what comes out. And what we see here is that we are doing great on the input indicators, and that's why we're getting quite high up on the list. But what comes out of it? So then we show you a picture of a machine. And now we're going to just walk through here, and I didn't introduce each of every one of you, and you heard the names, but you might not have know which name fits which face. Amir.
Hello.
Say hello, and you tell everybody who you are, and then we go through.
All right. Amir Sasson, Provost, Vice President of BI.
Henning Wall from Norvestor Equity.
Ståle Løbukten from Owners Room.
Tom Lerman from DNB, banker.
Karianne Melleby, I'm from Startup Lab.
Øyvind Mikkelsen. Today I'm a County Director for Planning, Economic Development and Planning. From January 2020, I'm a head of a section working with innovation and research.
So, Øyvind, why do I have a picture of a machine here?
Why do you have a picture of a machine?
Yeah, it's a metaphor.
Well, maybe you could give me a little hint.
There is sand in the machine.
Yeah.
And the innovation ecosystem is...
Yeah, that's what you're talking about.
Yes.
It doesn't work. There is improvement to get the sand away from the machine and make it function more smoothly and more efficient.
Right, so what we're going to do now, we're going to quickly go through 10 possible sands or pieces of sand, is that what it's called? And then we're going to look at some potential or possible actions that we can do. And here is one sand is that there is actually a weak R&D level in business and industry in the region and in Norway. And that is just, we see it on all indicators, all international list. Norwegian industry does not put so much money into R&D as our competitors. And our competitors are not the rest of the world. It is those we compete directly with in the modern, complex knowledge economy. So we like to say that our region competes with Stockholm, Copenhagen, Amsterdam, London. And then we don't fully know what to do in order to increase the R&D level in business and industry, but it's a reality. Now, another reality is that there is, this is hard, a fragmented innovation ecosystem. Amir, how do we know there is a fragmented ecosystem?
I will speak from basically the academic side and how the academic side is supposedly connected to industry. In reality, we have 40, and I say supposedly, right? And I'm damn direct for those who know me. We have 40,000 researchers. Now, here's the question. You wake up in the morning, what's your incentive system? Where is it in your incentive system that you go wake up and go Equinor and say, I need to speak with you? Noops. My incentive system is about publishing a paper. We play 40,000 people want to be Einstein, and not 40,000 people. Some will be Einstein, or actually no one will be Einstein, but at least some have potential to be small Einsteins. But the rest, 39,800, actually should spend the time translating knowledge from around the globe, coming new knowledge, and how to help value creation. In reality, everyone wants to be Einstein. Incentive system for the universities are only about being Einsteins. It's research productivity. Research productivity means another unread article. That's how it works. Just look at citation, right? The median number of citations are around one or two, depending on which journal we're talking about. So we really speak about an entire profession that instead of using their amazing knowledge, because they are on the right side of the human capital distribution, in helping industry move on, they're more obsessed with looking internally than looking externally. Again, don't read it that everyone in academia is looking internally, but look at it as a sickness that exists in academia and does not really help the society move forward. So we put 40,000 positions. We pay most of them by the government, besides the fact that we pay ourselves, right, at BI. Everyone else is basically paid by the state and has a very, very different incentive system than the five-factor models that was presented to you.
Yeah. So we produce 1.6 million research papers a year, peer-reviewed. You can multiply those 1.6 million by the number of hours that are put into writing them and the number of hours that are put into reading them by the reviewers. But we're going to get back to that incentive system, because the fact that it's a fragmented ecosystem is not only on the academic side. It's all the parts in the ecosystem. So here is the research incentives. Now, the incentives, the universities are paid. 60% is base funding. You get it if you do it bad or if you do it well. It doesn't matter. That's what you get. This is the public sector. Then you have incentives for research and incentives for producing students. There are no incentives for collaborating with industry, collaborating with business, collaborating with investors, collaborating with entrepreneurs, nothing. Which means that if I ask you, can you start working with Ståle on this project? It's very interesting, and we create some new innovation. You would say, how would that help me become a full professor? I would say, no, it doesn't help you. Actually, it will hurt you, because then you will not have the time to write the papers. So then you would say, why should I do that? And I said, I don't have a good answer to that. So we need to change that. More concerns, academic funding model. Yeah, we've been there. Next one is a weak Okay, so here's the question. Oslo Metropolitan, the Oslo Kommune, municipality, there you go, is just a small part of this region. The functional part is much larger. The metropolitan part is much larger. And of course, you know what's going to happen from January. This is how it's going to happen. So, Øyvind, this is a concern. The question is, what do you do with it? Can you say a little bit about how Akershus and Oslo Kommune has overcome this fact that these are two different administrative regions that are strongly integrated?
We have Akershus and Oslo today has a strong collaboration in several areas. Among those, we have a common regional plan for innovation and business development. So we are strongly connected. And this regional plan will function until it is released by a new plan for the Viken region. And as we see it, we will have a strong collaboration also with Oslo in the future. This cooperation with Oslo is continuing, and has also been much stronger the last couple of years. When we get into Viken, I think we'll have a situation where we could contribute more to the regional perspective. And as the county councillor mentioned earlier today, he spoke about several strong competence enterprises which we have in Viken, in Kongsberg, in Halden, together what we today have in Akershus and Oslo. This could be a really strong collaboration also about a driving force for further development in the greater Oslo region.
Karianne, if you're going to compete with Stockholm and Copenhagen and Helsinki, you know, is there any borders between Oslo and Viken?
No, I was just going to ask if I could have a comment to
it. Yes, great. Exactly.
Because I think we were discussing yesterday, and we had a workshop yesterday, and we concluded that the entrepreneurs, they don't care about borders. So they just care about where can I have access to a production line or talent or competence, capital, and so forth and so on. So. And I think I just want to quote Tor Heyerdahl because he said something very nice. And that was, borders, I've never seen one, but I hear they exist in the minds of some people.
Excellent.
And I think that is really a good thing to remember. And if we have Norwegian entrepreneurs who would be better off connecting with talented people in Stockholm, so they will. So it's more about how can we make the assets that we have in this region more available and even maybe attract people from Stockholm and Gothenburg or Copenhagen if that's what we want to do. So I think we should be more precise on what are the great assets that we have and how can we utilize them more. Not focus so much on whether it's going to be Viken, Akershus, Oslo, or just include the great things happening in Kongsberg and Halden and make it available for people.
Eivind?
I certainly agree, but I think it's important to how we collaborate on the authority side. Today, there is things going on about how the authorities should work with the business development and innovation in Norway, and it's rather important to see how we use those tools to stimulate the development in the region. Mm-hmm. So I agree, it's not about borders, but it's also about doing things at different level. The enterprises don't see those borders, but the authorities, we have to see how we could work to make this efficient and use those tools to develop the region in a good way.
Yes, so the concern here is, of course, that with the establishment of Viken, there will, at least for a while, be so much focus on just making things work that coordination between Viken and Oslo would suffer. we hope that will not be the case. And with people like Eivind, maybe it won't. That's good. Right, so there's more concerns here. What does it say? Missing competence. Now, this is interesting. What you see behind me now is from NAV's Tilstands report, basically showing that the percentage of companies that have failed to hire a person with the right competence, this was from this spring, this year. So in the Vestviken, you have 24% of the companies were not able to find the competence they were looking for. The orange is those companies who didn't hire because they couldn't find the right competence, and the green was the ones that hired a person with lower qualification. So obviously we have a situation here. We have 6,500 unfilled positions for engineers and ICT specialists. Now there are about 4,000 looking for jobs in the same market sector, but that's not the point. The point is that there are 6,500 that are unfilled, and those who were looking didn't meet those criteria. So we have actually a big challenge, and we have done some telephone interviews, and this has been listed as number one as the main concern for innovation companies in Oslo and Viken for growth. Henning, comments on that? Have you noticed in your position as an investor the problem with getting the right competence?
I believe it's more of a global challenge. Digital competence is in high demand, I think, all over the world. We've invested in the Nordics for the past 20 years, and I don't think Oslo is worse off than a lot of other regions. We're a pretty attractive place. So to attract these competent people from around Europe or the rest of the world is absolutely doable. Mm. So it's, yes, it would be great if we could have more digital competence and education in the region, but I wouldn't put it on the top of the concern list, actually, in terms of driving competitiveness.
So if we are, we know that there are This what it says here. It says there's relatively few with higher education. Wasn't that strange when I showed you when we started that one of the things we're known for is that in this region people are well educated? Well, those indicators, they count everything from bachelor and up as higher education. And in Norway, everybody takes a bachelor degree. However, if you look at master and PhD, we are below the OECD average. That's not good. So there's no master syke, master illness in Norway. Actually, it's den mangelsykdom. The focus must be that we need to focus on what are the right educations we need for driving innovation and entrepreneurship in this region. Yes?
Do you have the numbers for executive training?
No, I don't.
No. Because I
would love to.
That would also be valuable to know. Maybe you have Amir or.
Yeah. I mean, I know because we are executive training BI, right? So basically, the market is very clear, right? You have a few small initiatives by NHH and TNU, right, that basically have nothing to do in the afternoon, so they do it. But seriously, 6,000 students come through BI every year. And that's really the market. This is not to say that that should be the market, right? Basically, suddenly the government decide to wake up and maybe change the law so the others can compete with us, that we, of course, welcome that. But actually, we haven't internalized that lifelong learning yet. The fact that we have 6,000 students every year at BI just means that we have not actually increased the incentives on the firm side to send their employees to continue learning all the time. Because the market is way, way more than 6,000 a year, right? Probably 10 times that. So that's why we welcome that competition, because the market needs to grow. The other thing about this, it's one thing to get talent from abroad. It's great. It's nice that Oslo is attractive. But the ideal will be if we can combine those who actually understand the culture, the way we work, in addition to that. Now, how do we produce candidates? Of course. There's only one institution which is market-based. The others are path-dependent. Because the state every year allocates study places. And the first allocation is what we did last year. Not what industry will need in 3 years' time or 5 years' time. So it's what we did last year, each which faculty we have, that will determine where we're going to place our studies or study places, as it's called in Norwegian. Instead of saying, what will the industry need in 3 to 5 years? Okay, they need 2,000, 5,000 in IT. Great. Today we have to change. So it's a market-based mechanism versus a path dependency mechanism. And I'm really happy that we continue with path dependency, because my organization will continue doing well.
So Ståle,
yes.
So in order to grow a company, scaling up, yes, you need people who know how to do that. So do we have that funnel of people who know how to scale up a company, and also possibly internationally?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the entrepreneurs might disagree a little bit with Henning on the, you know, that all the talent that we need is available. I think it might be that he's investing in, you know, a later stage, like
But for
startups and you know, growth companies, I think, you know, we found that a lot of entrepreneurs saying that, you know, it's difficult to grow from, let's say, 10 to 50 and beyond, and find the right people when you need them, with the right skills and so on, especially, okay, it's mentioned here, ICT skills and stuff like that. But there's also, let's say, a commercial part of it, which is in high demand. We need to grow these companies, and commercial talent is you know, quite attractive. I think that's an issue. We need to work on that. It's improving. And I think also there's a culture thing, that we might need to work on. Is it, you know, it's okay to build a small company. That's fine. But, you know, how many people have the intention and motivation to, you know, really, really want to build a large, innovation-driven enterprise? I mean, that's something that we need to nurture and help. But it's improving, so we're getting there.
Tom,
yeah.
So why is Norway's largest bank interested in this?
On many different levels, yeah. Actually. DNB, as a bank, yeah, we need a vibrant business in Norway. But as an industry, a big contender, we also need to be challenged on innovation. Mm. And then you need small companies that actually innovate. Now I think DNB is an innovative business, but we need the challenge.
But entrepreneurial innovation is disruptive. It might disrupt the banking sector.
It is disrupting the banking sector. And
you're not nervous.
Very.
Yeah.
But I think that it's also healthy.
Yeah.
Everything is changing, and we need to be disrupted. We need to look at new business models, and I think that the new fintechs are helping us see that.
Mm. Okay, let's move on. Let's see if I can see what's next. Right. More concerns. Does the governance model for higher education sector disfavor innovation? Well, we've been partly doing that, but we have seen that the financing model creates some problems, because it hinders. Actually, if we work on innovation, we are financially punished. I would show you something else. We have seen that there's 93,000 or 100,000 technology jobs in this region. About 80% almost of the value creation and jobs in ICT are in this region. However, this is, if you go to DBH, DBH, and look at statistics, Norway students in engineering and technology, Oslo has about 7% of the students. They are distributed in a different way than where the jobs are, than where the companies are. And we know that one thing that is a key in the innovation-driven entrepreneur development is actually some geographically closeness between businesses and higher education and research companies. And here we have a situation where we are a bit concerned, and we would like to see more technology. I mean, the Oslo region must be the only capital region in Europe without a technology university. And I think that's concerning. So we have to compensate for that. Are some regulations and policies unhelpful? Well, there's always a discussion about option taxation. There's always a discussion of, you know, this is very clear for me. I realized this when I was going to change job recently, that the pension system was really making it difficult for me. That shouldn't make it difficult. But Ståle, are you concerned about options? Let's make it short, because don't go on a rant.
Short, yes.
Okay, right. Then we move on. Is the continuing education system underdeveloped? I believe it is. We have a model that is front-loaded. We're going to educate everybody in the front, and then they will sail on for the rest of their lives happily educated. We know that this is under scrutiny. Things will change. So hopefully it will change to a way that will support a growth, value creation in Norway. I would like to say one thing. Why is this important? Why is it important what we're talking about here? I just want one answer from somebody. Just shout it out. Why is it important?
Because you want innovation here in Oslo.
I will lift that. If we are looking at how this government is going to balance its budgets in the years ahead. The government has announced that it's moving forward the work on the when the government is looking in the long-term direction, we see that it needs pretty soon to start reducing its budget with about 5 billion kroner a year. That's a lot of money. We also know, you all saw the reports from the Climate Council last week. We need to reduce our emissions 7% a year. How are we going to do that if we are not focusing on this? This is a burning platform. I think most people don't realize this, maybe, but this is a real burning platform for us. Are there too few companies that scale, Henning?
Yes, definitely. That's really the topic of today and this program. And again, we would like as investors to see more scale-up potential. But there is quite some interesting companies. There is good entrepreneurship going on. Ståle has founded some companies into it. It's a lot of others that also can instill the self-confidence to really go after a more global market and be ambitious. So I think we definitely have a lot to build on,
yeah.
But that we can accelerate it also through this program and bringing the stakeholders together, I definitely believe. And I'll hope we can engage you all in continuing to evolve this ecosystem, because there is really some very good things about it as well. It's not that much sand in it.
It's a little bit sand. Ståle, is there a cultural issue? Do we have a challenge with culture? Like, do we have? Are people hungry enough? Do they want to go on a limb and try something that is risky? Or are Norwegians really gung ho?
Yeah, that's a good question. Some of them are gung ho. some are getting there. But I guess there's more potential. I also think we can learn from, let's say, other cultures like Danes and the Netherlands and so on when it comes to the commercial side of it. We are very good at, you know, producing companies that find, you know, new products and so on. But we're not so good yet with, you know, commercializing and making them grow and scale.
Right. So now we need to move on to from concerns to measures or to actions, possible actions to improve innovation output. And we can look at ways to fix the machine. If there's sand in the machine, Henning says there's a few sand corns, but not that many. there are some, but not. Or by making use of opportunities. So these are some measures. Improving, and we just class measures improving national framework conditions. Rammevilkår. Measures building innovation capacity and measures targeting the capital region. And we're going to move quickly to the measures that we can handle, which is measures that. Actions that targets the capital region, but let's just look at it. Improving national framework conditions, change the framework conditions for higher education sector. This is just something we are, I believe we need to do, but it's up to the national government, and it's kind of out of our hands. But we need to change the funding model, in my view. And we need to maybe give higher education some autonomy in going that direction, at least some indicators that are more helpful. We need support to scale up, not just to start up. Establish incentives for J-curve growth companies. Would you like to say something about J-curve growth companies?
I think everybody here in the ecosystem knows what the J-curve growth companies are.
But
it's the IDEs, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we need to support scale up, not just startup. There's a lot of focus on supporting startups, and scale ups have fallen off. Have not had the focus. Nobody wants to comment on that. Oh yeah, you.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't go on a rant.
No problem. Right, we have about 8,000 firms every year starting up. Those are the numbers. If you just fast forward 10 years after starting, only 0.1%, that's 1 in 1,000, basically means 8, will scale up to anywhere around 500 employees. Those are just sure statistics in a way. So we can have basically two causes for this. A, the market works perfectly. Therefore, all those with low quality are being, you know, they die. And that's all great, right? But that means we have a quality problem. The other one is that, okay, market may be semi-functioning. So some of them still survive. But then we have a culture which says it's enough if I buy or I basically develop a household company, which means I have enough to buy my house, my heater, my Tesla, two of them, and I can retire because I have also an apartment in Spain, and then that's where I stop. Basically 5 to 15 employees and I stop. 90% of all firms in Norway have less than 20 employees. This is just, again, facts in Norway every year. So it's most likely it's a combination of semi-functioning market of low quality and a culture that says it's enough for me after 10 employees, rather than saying that the best thing ever, right, for my students will be to be the manager of a 250 employee, which is a global niche market, right, basically go to global market and have a niche product and they are the winner in that one. We're still not there, right? We have some good stories coming from those two sides, those two gentlemen on the left, but it's not systemized enough. Because we need many more of those.
Can I just add a comment?
Please.
So if you take a company like Tandberg, Most of you looks like you're old enough to remember Tandberg. It was acquired by Cisco, and we all know the story. Cisco is now a big conferencing system global, and it's. But the entrepreneurs were probably happy about it, so they sold their company, and like you say, they moved on to retired in Spain, and they're living happily ever after. And we have lots of those examples. However, now we see that the entrepreneurs behind Tandberg, they are now starting new companies like Hudley Cameras, and the entrepreneurs behind Hudley are now on their second startup, doing lenses for diabetic and health measurements. So I think it's also part of our culture that we want to be the entrepreneurs, not really the scalers. So it might be something that we need to change, and I think that we will see some of these companies becoming international Norwegian companies in the future, not just selling them off.
Yeah.
So let's hope that we have learned something on the way.
So now we need to really go into the last measures, actions. We're going to strengthen the technology education in Oslo Viken. That's important. Ownership skills, entrepreneurial skills, access to lifelong learning. Okay, but let's look at the last measures, targeting the capital region. We need to make. I think Norway needs a hovedstadsregionspolitikk eller strategi. Make a national strategy for the capital region. It's a very long time since we had any reflections on that, and the nation needs to make a reflection on what they're going to use this region for. So, and there's two more here: establish a regional IDE instrument, and capitalize on the region's comparative advantages in data-driven value creation. These are the last two. And this means a data sandbox kind of initiative. So establish a regional IDE instrument. Please, Tom.
Well, as we commented, going forward, it's fragmented, but I think there's. I think it's very important to say that there's a lot of really good initiative that's going on.
Very much.
But it's fragmented, and I think that you need to, in order to accelerate it, I think we need to make a stronger impact when it comes to this instrument, and definitely use also all the stakeholders that there are really getting into it and committed to doing a difference with it.
The point here is that we have a lot of very good initiatives and instruments in region, but the region's ecosystem is fragmented. It doesn't gel together. The machines, the parts are not put together. How do we do that? And there's so many relatively easy things we can do to increase that in this region. And it's time that we do that. The other one is a data sandbox, and who wants to jump on that? I think you want to jump on that, Henning, yes.
I want to jump on it. As you might have heard, it's not all about the sand. It's also about trying to utilize the areas where you do have competitive advantage. And having worked on a global scale with quite a few businesses, the mere fact that the trust between the actors in this part of the world is very high is a huge competitive advantage. And when it comes to also all these data-driven businesses that are being created, that's really what digital is about. It's about Amazon, Facebook, everyone is really harvesting insight from the data and value from that. What if we in this region could put up a sandbox where public institutions, private enterprise made data from their line of work available for research, but also for commercialization. If we could do that, I think we could spur a lot of IDE type of entrepreneurship. and to tie it up towards the universities, that could really be something to build on.
Right, so now we are going to land, and what we have done now is that we started out with showing that in this region there is an enormous difference compared to comparable regions in how much money and effort we're putting into this machine, to this innovation ecosystem, and how much is coming out. So there's two ways we can move forward. We can look at, or we can, first of all, there are some issues we can do to repair and make that machinery work better. And there are some things we can do to make use of our comparative advantage. So we have then proposed 10 measures. And it's on another slide somewhere. And we're finished. I'm thanking you so much for your time and for your really interesting work in the REAP project. Thanks a lot.